This episode of Anxious and Angry is brought to you live from the Stanley Hotel.
The dollar dances on our asses!
There it is. All right. This is a very special bonus edition of Anxious and Angry. I am not at the Stanley Hotel right now. I'm back in Inglewood setting this motherfucker up. But I have so many emails to get through that I decided I would do two this week and use the bit that I recorded with my friend Nicole at the Stanley Hotel in Colorado. So that's how I'm going to do this. To keep with the theme of this spooky podcast, I asked my friend to send me his goth band that he's been working on in GarageBand. His name is Brandon Hamilton in Austin. He plays in a band called Prince there. And I honestly kind of got it because I was like, oh, you do that. I want to hear it. I want to hear if it's funny or whatever. Turns out it's awesome. And he thinks it's funnier. I don't know what his deal is, but I love it. And now I'm trying to get him to actually do this band, and I want to be in the band. So, I don't know what he calls it. I think he calls it dark wave, but that doesn't make sense because isn't that a genre of music? But this is Brandon's goth band. Hopefully, at some point, I can actually say our goth band that he writes songs for, and I just get to wear makeup. But this song is called A Long Time Ago. And after that, we're going to get right into the Stanley Hotel edition, where we read some stories, and it's honestly kind of bad. But it's bad because we bought a book in the gift shop of the hotel, and we didn't pre-read the stories, and they're just kind of lame. So I did my best to doctor them up with some music and sound effects to actually make it kind of funny. But whatever. Here's a goth song. And we'll just kind of do our best to make this a good one. And after the stories and the whatnots, because I think we just get too drunk to even care anymore, I'll field some questions. So, bonus edition, spooky songs. The song isn't that spooky, but it's good. All right, we'll be right back.
And I
All right, we're back. We are here at the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado. I'm here with my friend Nicole.
Hello.
Hello. Good to see you.
You as well.
So the story of this is, if you don't know anything about this hotel, it is where Stephen King stayed and was inspired to write The Shining, correct? He didn't write it here?
He did not write it here.
Okay. But the coolest part about this room that we are in right now is if you look around the corner, you can see room 217. It's, would you say it's directly connected to it?
Yes. And our windows go right out and onto the landing.
We can go out onto the landing and then peek into that room.
And we probably will later.
I mean, you know that he's not in there. I know that he's not in there.
It's apparently a haunted room as well.
Anyway, so this hotel is haunted as fuck. And I am driving back to California. I happen to realize that my friend Nicole is in Denver.
From DC
at the same time. Mm-hmm. What are the chances of that? So I've always wanted to come here. I know that you and Sheena dressed up as the two little girls from The Shining for Halloween.
Yep, the Grady twins.
And I figured I could convince you to come out here and be scared to death with me. So this spooky episode, we are going to roam around. We're going to take pictures and put them up in the gallery. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about a few of the stories that happened here. We'll start with one in a minute here. And we're going to just try and find a ghost. I'm going to leave my recorder on all night. Apparently, there are tons of ghosts in this place, and it's not bullshit.
They may try to find us. We may not have to find them.
They're definitely going to find me. I think I have like a week between the two realms of reality, ghost and mine. There's something going on there where I'm pretty much fucked. But I'm excited. This will be fun. It's our first paranormal and probably our last paranormal investigation. But we found a book in the gift shop of doom, and it's called Ghost Stories of the Stanley Hotel and Estes Valley by Celeste Lasky. And we're going to read a quick story of that just to give you an idea of what we're working with here tonight. And, you know, to document, because I'm assuming I'm going to be killed. So, Nicole, quickly read a story before the sun goes down and we are dead.
Okay. This story is called Mostly Ghostly Music. The sumptuous Stanley Hotel in the Colorado Rockies near the town of Estes Park opened its doors in 1909. To celebrate the occasion, F.O. Stanley presented his wife Flora with a new Steinway grand piano. It had arrived by train in Lyons? Whatever.
That's
Colorado.
That's the town we went through that you said, oh, this place is cool.
Colorado, a small train stop about 20 miles from Estes Park. From Lyons, the Steinway was carried by ox cart up the steep canyon road to the hotel. Flora established afternoon concerts in the years to follow in the music room. These concerts were social affairs in every sense of the word. The women wore gowns and the men sported their tuxedos. Many great and near great musicians played at these concerts. Ultimately, the music extended to weddings and more recently to the Stanley Concert Series. As time passed, stories began to surface about the music room and its grand piano. One of the strangest involved the night manager of the hotel. It was in the early 1980s. The night manager, John, checked his watch. It was 11:30 p.m. Thunder rolled outside after each flash of lightning. He walked to the front door and looked out. It was raining with a vengeance. "Glad I'm inside tonight," he said to the empty lobby. The lights flickered. "Boy, just like in the movies, a bad storm, lights about to go out, and no one around." He continued to no one. "Guess I'd better get back to work." John went back behind the reception desk and began going over his usual paperwork. He was engrossed in what he was doing then. "What?" He looked up, peering over the desk. "Nothing. How about that? I'm spooked by the storm," he laughed. He went back to his paperwork again, this time determined not to be distracted. Within a few minutes, there it was. Music. "Who in the world has a radio on down here?" John walked out into the lobby, ready to ask whoever it was to be considerate to the guests upstairs and to turn the radio off. Entering the lobby, he looked around but saw no one. However, the music room lights were on. Had I forgotten to turn them off? So he headed in that direction. As he approached the door to the music room, he could see the piano keys moving, filling the room with beautiful music. But no one was sitting at the piano. As he stepped across the threshold of the room, the music stopped. "No, I don't think I believe in what I'm seeing. Of course not. At least I don't think so." John was not a believer in ghosts. However, he lost no time in returning to the front desk, locking himself in. Later, conversing with himself as a means of settling his nerves, he came to the conclusion. Perhaps Flora was again happy that guests were at the Stanley, able to hear the music of her beloved Steinway.
That's good. I don't know. I'm hoping to hear some music.
I'm sure we'll hear some music.
You think so?
Yeah.
All right.
Why wouldn't we?
Well, I'm definitely going to be playing scary music all night as I sit up here in this chair, freaked out. There's two little girls running around here, you said?
Apparently. On the second floor, which is where we are.
We are on the second floor, right by the scary room. All right, we're going to leave it at that for now. I'm going to play, I don't know what I'm going to play right now. Probably some spooky music.
Mostly ghostly music?
I got to play ghostly music on this one. And we'll be back with another story. We're going to go wander around, take some pictures while there's still daylight. And then we'll continue to read a couple stories. And I don't know. No plans on this one. But right now we got to go. So here's some spooky music. Welcome back to Anxious and Angry's Stanley Hotel Edition. Sorry, cleared my throat real professional. Nicole and I are back in room 223, adjacent to haunted little girl Stephen King room. What did we do, Nicole?
We walked the grounds. We saw quite a few very creepy concert halls and abandoned.
And this was during the daylight. Now that we are, it's pitch dark out. It's starting to vamp up a little bit in here. So we did that. We had some dinner. And I realized that this is the hotel where they filmed Dumb and Dumber.
I'm pretty sure.
And I don't know why, but
I'm pretty sure.
Well, I'm saying that. You made me realize that. But yeah, take it easy. I'm not trying to steal your thunder here. The more important thing is that obviously I love that movie, and I think it's kind of outweighing the whole Shining thing that this whole thing started with. So I definitely need to get a picture with some of the the bar scenes down there. My favorite thing about that movie, by the way, is when he says, I think he's sitting there with a cowboy hat on at the bar that we were just at. And that girl's talking to him and blabbing, and he goes, I don't care. And that's how I feel when anyone talks to me. So
that's perfect.
So I'm going to sit in that exact spot. We're going to look it up.
I'm going to take a video of you doing it.
You're going to talk to me, and okay. I'm going to say that to you. And okay. It's going to be the best. So Dumb and Dumber, very cool. But that's not why we're here. We're here to basically
take it back to the creepy.
Find the meaning of life. Do you haunt hotels after you die? Or is that only old-timey shit?
I think we most certainly do.
Nicole's going to read us another story about our location, I guess. This exact place we're in right now. Apparently it's not cool. What do you got for us?
I'm going to stick to the music theme and play And the Band Played On.
All right. You're going to play that?
Yeah.
We're a few drinks in, by the way.
I'm going to read it.
I want you to know we're doing this in segments, and each one is going to get dumber and dumber, just like the movie. And
Ryan had a red rum punch.
How do you not order a red rum punch when it's there? I also played a piano in the ballroom here, and it was super sick.
And I stuck my face through an axed out hole in a doorway.
Yeah. You were like such a tourist. You were embarrassing me.
You did it as well.
Yeah, we'll put the pictures up. We took a lot of good pictures. I took some serial killer style pictures. Sorry, I know this format is way off of us just rambling and talking about things, but we're very excited. And we're two sheets to the wind?
Maybe three.
Not yet. No. Okay. Oh, we'll be three.
One and a half.
Yeah, we're one and a half sheets to the wind. So the next time we come up here for the final segment will be...
Lower your expectations.
Yeah, we're probably not going to read anything.
Or will we?
I'm not reading shit. But it's going to be funny. And then we'll do one in the morning before we leave and talk about all the horrible things that happen.
If we're still here.
One thing before you continue your story. Well, let's say start your story. Yep, I forgot. All right, I'm just going to erase that part. Go ahead. What's this story called?
And the Blant.
I'll edit that out too. Keep going.
And the Band Played On.
All right, And the Band Played On. What's happening?
In December of 1994, Juan, a chef at the Stanley Hotel, was getting ready to go home. However, he still had an errand to run. The nearby ATM awaited. It was snowing and cold, but he needed cash for the next morning. So he decided to brave the weather and drive the short distance to get it. Brr, it's cold. I've got to get the heater checked. It will take till I get back to the hotel for it to get warm. Juan tapped in the necessary numbers at the ATM machine and waited. Within an hour, the machine rolled out the desired cash. He pocketed the money and got back in the car, heading back to the Stanley Hotel and his dormitory room. Man, I can hardly wait to get inside again. I'm freezing. The drive back to the hotel was slow because the snow was accumulating rapidly on the road. Within a few minutes, Juan noticed a car in front of him going equally as slow. The two vehicles plowed through the snow together. As they came up the road nearest the carriage house of the Stanley Hotel, the car in front slowed almost to a stop. Why is he slowing down? We'll both get stuck in the snow if we stop, Juan said aloud to himself. At that point, he discovered why the car in front had slowed down. The carriage house was ablaze with lights. Juan thought he heard music, so he rolled down his window. Wow, there's a party going on in there. They're dancing. Evidently, the driver of the car in front had rolled his window down, too, and was watching the festivities. The two cars inched along as the drivers watched the people. Some stepped outside briefly, perhaps for a breath of fresh air. They were dressed elegantly. I guess they're having a Christmas party. I wonder why I didn't hear about it, Juan asked the night air. Maybe I'll walk over after I park the car. I think I'll ask the night desk clerk about it first. Juan parked the car in his usual spot and walked around the front of the hotel and entered. A gentleman in heavy winter garb was at the desk, just registering in. Say, what's the party all about down the way? In that last building on the end? Thought I might check it out. Is it private? The guest asked the night desk clerk. Just then, Juan walked up. Hi, I'm the guy who was driving behind you. Did you see the party down in the carriage house, or was I imagining it? Yeah, I saw all the lights on and the party and the people dancing to pretty good music, the guest said. I just asked the clerk here if it's a private party or can anyone from the hotel go. Both men looked at the clerk. He gave them a puzzled look. What party at the carriage house? There's nothing going on there. The building is closed up until who knows when. Have you guys been partying? Hey, I just got off work and went down to the ATM, Juan answered. And I've just driven up from Denver. No stops, the guest said. Well, there's one way to settle this. Why don't you two take a walk down to the carriage house and see what's up, the night clerk said. The men looked at each other, shrugged, and nodded. Sure, why not, Juan said. Both men bundled up in their coats and headed out, the night clerk smiling and shaking his head. They walked the short distance to the carriage house, heads bent into the wind and snow. As they approached the building, they were able to straighten up. They stared in disbelief at the carriage house. It was completely boarded up, silent, and dark.
What? I said, oh, what? Yeah. That's impossible. Or is it?
The Stanley.
That's why Stanley we're Hotel. Here, the Stanley Hotel, to find out if random parties happen around here. Random parties happen wherever I go. That's just
hotel
a fact.
Parties.
That's a fact of life, yeah. But haunted parties?
Haunted
I don't know.
Hotel parties.
I definitely think us sitting in here talking about this is pissing off ghosts.
We'll see what happens.
You know, they don't want people to know this. All right, we are going to go see what happens. We're going to go walk the grounds now because it's dark. Maybe we probably won't read another story because we're going to have our own story to tell. But we got a lot more drinking to do and a lot. This is the best ghost hunting podcast there is. I kind of want to make you read another story because you're stumbling a little bit here and there. And I know you're a very well read person, but it's
show the
this
progression.
Pausing like for Juan.
I did not do that. Maybe I did.
No, you didn't. You're good. All right. Here's some more spooky music. We'll be spooky music because I'm a cow. We'll be back after we do some crazy shit. Oh my God, an orb.
You ever
Alright, we've mystically been transported back to Inglewood, California a couple months later, a month later from when that was all taped. I know I'd said, or we had both said that we were going to get back and report. We didn't bother because there was nothing to report. It's a spooky hotel. It was cool. Nothing ghastly or ghoulish happened, but I had fun putting music to that. But anyway, yeah, it was cool. If you have a chance to go there, I would recommend it. It was fun. So I'm getting so many fucking emails that I decided that I can't really rely on once a week to deal with all that. So, and also I'm going to run out of people that I want to talk to eventually, like just people that I respect and care about, I guess, or care about what they would have to say. So we're going to do this, this kind of thing where I'll just fuck around and play songs I like, and then we'll just kind of get into this. So without screwing around anymore, let's pick up right where the episode with Clayton ended. I got this today or yesterday. There's a date on it. It says May 5th. That's today. All right. Hey, Ryan. So I just listened to episode 5 and heard the email from Matt about his father and how you could relate. Quick recap. Matt had a father that was kind of a pile of garbage, a human trash barrel who, that's a Boston thing to say, trash barrel, who just was using him to get back with his mom because he had prostate cancer and things like that. I think that this is for Matt specifically or anyone who has shitty dad problems. But anyway, so I wanted to chime in a little. I too have daddy issues. Ugh, don't we all? My mother and father were never married, and he left before I was born. I met my father for the first time in kindergarten. I didn't see him again till I was 13, saw him again when I was 16, and the last time I saw him, I was 21. I'm 25 now. The meeting him at 13 and 16 was because I was in the hospital and was on his insurance, so he was informed of it through the insurance company. Putting me on his insurance was the only thing he ever did for me as a child. I'd slow clap that if I could. What a good dude. During my life, he got married and had 3 kids with his wife. He actually stayed with his family and raised these kids. When I was around 17, I received a phone call from my mother that my father ran away with some girl he just met to wherever, which means I no longer had health insurance. But not only me, he left his wife and 3 kids without as well. Wow. Just up and left his family to run away with some chick. Long story short, he comes back, now in a relationship with this girl, and tries to reconnect with his 3 sons from his wife, but not me. I didn't hear from him again until I'm 21, and I get a text one day asking for us to meet up. It turns out that this meeting was one of the best things that could have happened to me. In our brief talk, I discovered he was an idiot and an asshole. I friend him on Facebook as a nice gesture to get to see all the pictures of him going out and being a father to his other children and not giving me the time of day. Fast forward a couple of years and he gets married to the girl he ran away with, and I see all the wedding photos on Facebook of him, my 3 half-brothers, all having a wonderful time. I didn't get so much as an invite. Jesus, dude. I spent my whole life wondering if he cared about me, wondering if I did something wrong. It wasn't until maybe a year ago I realized I did nothing wrong, and he doesn't care about me. He doesn't love me and never did. I can't tell you how liberating that was. It felt so good to at least have an answer to those questions. Now I look back, and I'm glad he was never there. Who knows what kind of person I could have become if he was. The best thing my mother ever did was not have him in my life, and I'm grateful for that. I'm actually about to become a father myself. The due date was 2 days ago, so literally, at any moment, my first son is expected to arrive. I've struggled with how I can be a good father when I don't know what one is. I really think the answer is to be the father I always wanted. Take everything I wanted as a child, just apply it to that to my son. In a way, I suppose my father gave me that as well, a perfect example of what not to be. don't hate my father because hating him would give him more thought and attention than he deserves. I now just find myself wondering, how could a person be so shitty? My baby's not even out yet, and I can't imagine not being there for him. To that question, I'll probably never get an answer. More directly on Matt's situation, if my father called me and said he had cancer, I'd say that sucks, and that would be it. It sucks that a person has that terrible disease and is going to die, but that shouldn't be a catalyst for a relationship. If your father does pass without making amends, don't feel bad. Just because he's sick, that's not a reason to have him in your life if you don't want him there. Because maybe you'll realize not having him in your life was a good thing. And like me, if you have children of your own, you can use that to be the father you never had. You're not alone, and once you stop saying, but it's my dad, and start realizing that shitty people, regardless of who they are, will only make your life shitty, you can let that go and move on. Hopefully this helps, and I wish you luck. Ryan, thanks for reading, and you can air this if you'd like. I just wanted to chime in and maybe help. Rereading this, it sounds like more like venting than advice, but who knows. Thanks, Rich. Rich, that's actually super good advice, and I hope Matt actually hears that and understands. It really isn't a fucking good idea to let that kind of thing back in your life. But I know what that's like to feel that guilt. I have that guilt every day, even though I just... Like, I get in this with my sister all the time, and she's like, Ryan, you just have to let that go. He's not going to change. He doesn't care. If he did, he wouldn't be the way he is. So, I guess, yeah, just take that and find what you need from someone else from that sort of thing. And I guess best of luck, both of you guys. You got a bad hand dealt to you, but... Whatever, fuck it. Pick up and move on, I guess, is the best thing you can do. All right, we got a couple more. Well, I have like 100 more, but we're going to read a couple more. And then that'll be it for today and this week. And then I got to figure out who's going to be next. Shelby writes in, I accidentally composed you a fucking novel, and for that I apologize. But it ends with compliments, so there's that. So here I am, sitting in my car, eating a hot dog on my lunch break, word up, and just finished listening to the latest Anxious and Angry installment for probably the third time. Ooh, nice. A few things have resonated with me. Above all, the incredibly obscure fucking advice of learning to just chill the fuck out. This has been an issue in my life. I have every opportunity to be obscenely happy with myself if I wasn't so tightly wound. I found myself overthinking, over-dramatizing, and losing my mind on problems I'm likely making up. I sabotage my relationship and my friendships as a result. Worst part is, I watch myself do all this and just think, Jesus, woman, it's not that bad. What the fuck are you doing? So as it is, that's the last thing I need to work on. However, I recently came over a rather large hurdle in my life, one that likely most of your listeners, and you as well, maybe, I don't know, might be dealing with. I battled with depression most of my life and into adulthood. Some rather aggressive PTSD. A few years ago, I found myself lying on my kitchen floor with my mouth around the business end of a 22. I'd like to tell you that getting off that floor was a metaphor for getting my stupid life together. No, haha, not even close. But in the last few months, fooling myself into thinking I'm a happy person just got exhausting. So I figured I could either sit in my shit or change. I went with the latter. I started pretty cliche. I started exercising more, eating better, dyed my hair, but all that got a little too routine, and I was just way too productive. Nice. I don't know that that's entirely possible, but... So the novelty began to wear off. That's when I looked at the one thing that needed changing that I'd been avoiding, my social circle. Maybe that's what more people should look at. What kind of people are you surrounding yourself with? I found that I had latched onto a group of incredibly incomplete people. People that romanticize the idea of being, frankly, just awful, bored with their lives and believing that superficial similarities are enough to form a true friendship. So I cut myself out. I alienated myself, which was lonely at first. But once I found myself being around my two or three real close friends, I was a million times happier. Change your friends, change your life. Go to the party, but leave at midnight. Go home and go to fucking bed. Jump into bed with people that have their shit together. Changing my entire social circle did wonders for my depression and dispelling my negative energy. find motivation in yourself and realize that maybe you're hanging out with some truly shitty people. I'm not sure what I'm looking for here, to help someone, because this was advice given to me. I'd also like some reassurance that I'm not a complete asshole for going about my life saying, fuck you people, you're awful, and I'm determined to be awesome. This was all pretty negative, so I'm going to close with throwing a few positives your way. Your podcast is fantastic. What you choose to do with it is amazing. Your music helped me through a lot of my own shit, so thanks. You have the most attractive neck beard I think I've ever seen. Oh, wow. Thanks for everything you do, and hopefully for reading all this shit. Shelby from Chicago. Well, Shelby, I hate to tell you this, but I shaved. I look like a hairless cat, a really fat, shitty hairless cat. It's a bummer. I'm immediately regretting it because I hate having a beard, but I apparently hate not having a beard too. So maybe that's something I need to work on. But you're right. Who you hang around with and who you surround yourself with is a massive, massive part of your own personal happiness. If you hang around with unmotivated people, you're probably not going to be that motivated. If you hang around with people who do drugs all the time, you're probably going to wind up doing drugs. It's the same thing. If you surround yourself with people that are like going for it and like ambitious as hell, you're going to be more motivated to do that as well. So you're not wrong. It's not necessarily an asshole thing of you, I don't think. Depending upon how you say it, I mean, I've done that before where I'm like, what the fuck, man? Nobody does anything around here. Nobody. And like, it's true, but you just kind of got to watch what you say. Some people are happy doing what they want to do. But if you're not, then yeah, you have to change. I get a lot of these emails are like, what should I do? What should I do? And a lot of it is what you just said. You have to change everything to be a little bit better. And it always works. It's not the only thing that you need to do, I'm sure, but it's definitely going to give you a completely different view on things. So thank you for suggesting that for everyone listening, Shelby. That's cool. That's Dee's advice, dog. So take it from her. Plus, she thinks I have a cool neck beard. I don't know what that means. What's a neck beard? That's gross. It sounds gross. I don't ever want to do that again. Moving on. Steven writes in, hi Ryan, I have a question about your songwriting. How do you handle the reactions of people close to you when you write a song about them? I write all the songs for my band, and the best inspiration for me is an argument with my wife. But then she gets upset and says people are going to know it's about her, and she doesn't want me letting everyone know what's going on with us. Any advice or suggestions? Thanks, Steve. Well, I mean, that's all up to you, really. The people that, I don't really write songs about other people in negative ways. Groups of people, but not specific people, really. So, it's all about me. And it is about the relationship, but not that person in the relationship. I don't know if you've noticed, my songs are semi self-deprecating, so I don't really generally go after someone else for the things that they do. I go after myself for what I do, which, you know, in real life, that's something that you should probably think about, everybody. It's not takes two to tango sort of thing, but I don't think I've ever really written a song where I wasn't joking, where it's like, fuck you, I'm right. But no, I'm always wrong because I'm a fucking idiot. The best thing that you could do is, well, you can't really even hide it. I was going to say you can like disguise it up and be a little arty about it, but I don't know. If she's bummed about it, then you have to decide whether you're willing to live with that or you're just like, not, you know, you got to change the way you do things. That's up to you. I know that my friend Jason, who sings in that band Sam I Am, listen to the record Whatever's Got You Down. He's been married for something like 19 years. He and his wife, I don't think she liked that record. And if you're doing any less than what Jason did on Whatever's Got You Down, then you're probably doing all right. So just play her that record and be like, at least it's not this. So that's the best I can do for you. I don't know if I even answered anything, but basically you're fucked either way because you're a musician. That it's a losing battle. So best of luck. Let me know what she says. Moving on. Jose writes in, "Hey Ryan, I just wanted to say it really meant a lot to me that you mentioned racism, homophobia, transphobia, and misogyny all in the first episode. I may be talking out of my ass, but the anti-establishment aspect of punk is something that I really that really appealed to me when I was getting into it. I can't think of anything more cowardly or establishment than being prejudiced against people for their race, gender, sexuality, etc., or endorsing the systematic application thereof. It doesn't take any guts to pick on a group that's already getting shit thrown at them, but the fact that you are standing with them is awesome. Thanks, Jose." Yeah, man, I mean, like, that's kind of something that, like I said, I assume it doesn't really happen within this thing that we do. I like that about this kind of music, too, when I got into it. But I honestly just forgot about it. It was never really an issue. And then once I finally started to see that, I was just like, Jesus Christ, the fuck, what happened here? So I don't know. Hopefully more people can learn a little bit of a lesson from that. Don't let people like that fucking hang out at your shows or your whatever you're doing in your circle of friends. They're fucking lame. Ain't no reason for that shit, y'all. A couple more here. Rob writes in, "Ryan, you ever consider doing any solo material, like all new songs, not just acoustic oath stuff? That would be cool. Also, I think Ryan Young Frank Turner split would be amazing. Thanks for everything, Rob." Yeah, I mean, I do want to do that. It just sucks because it's like a trend now. But at some point, it's just like, fuck it. I don't know. I have the ability in this room that I'm in to record music. I don't know why I wouldn't do that. I guess I wouldn't go the folk route. I'd kind of be more into the something a little bit different. I think the Americana thing is kind of dumb and overdone. Once like three people do it really well, then the demand is met. Split with Frank Turner. I don't know. Whatever. He's busy. He's busy taking over the world. But yeah, I bet you that'll happen at some point, actually. So, Rob, thanks. There's your answer. Well, folks, that's about the 45 or so minute mark, so we're going to call it a day here. Be sure and head over to anxiousandangry.com and grab something. Still got some flexies, still got some shirts, still trying to add new stuff to that. I'm gonna start doing some chalk drawing, I think. Get some super kick-ass dark goth things going. Limited edition stuff right from my wrist to a shipping tube to your wrists. What else? That should be about it. Make sure and keep writing me this stuff. I like it. anxiousandangry@gmail.com or call in 1-800-565-3250. And remember, if this is the first time you've ever listened to this podcast, this is a weird one. So, do not be deterred. All right, we'll see you next week.